Which one of y'all is the one in the crew who's always getting his toes sucked?
And Favreau is like, I fail to see how this is constructive. I've also been working to end imperialism. I don't see how it's prescient if Tommy or the other John sucks my toes or not. Bill Crystal doesn't suck my toes. Elliot Abrams doesn't suck my toes. We're all the homie that makes each other bust.
My least favorite thing about those Pod Save America guys is that, like, their names are just John Lovitz and John Favreau.
Yeah.
Like, come on, those are actors.
You should have to change your name.
Because all you're doing is you're setting everyone up for disappointment when you're not those guys.
If there was a podcast with John Lovitz.
Oh, my God.
People would have something to get mad about.
Complaining about
trans people.
Rate.
They stink.
Yeah. Yeah. He is on one.
And Victoria Jackson.
Yes.
That would rip. It's funny, talking. Like that whole generation of SNL people, early 90s, sort of the first post-80s renaissance, quote-unquote, people, they're all reactionary psychopaths.
Dennis
like
Miller.
Rob Schneider.
Yeah. Charles Rocket would have changed his name to Charles Martel if he had lived.
Joe Piscopo? That was actually slightly earlier.
That's earlier, but he is, too. They're all reactionaries. Two of one.
Sandler.
Always was.
Yep.
Definitely
Schneider,
is. Schneider. Yeah.
Miller, Victoria Jackson.
Yep.
I'm glad we don't get to know what Chris Farley's politics are.
He was a right winger at the time. He did fundraisers with Newt Gingrich.
Oh, really?
Yes.
But that's just like fat guy solidarity, right?
it was actually like woke. They were doing
his identity
fat acceptance. Yeah.
We'll be talking more about the Pod Save America guys a little bit later. But just to begin with, first of all, sitting in this week, let me introduce our guest. It's Dino Costella of the DSA Medicare for All campaign. Dino, welcome.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Dino, also from Philadelphia?
That's right.
From Philadelphia. Hmm.
He's the guy that ate the shit.
Greatest. it's the greatest city in the world. And if you guys, I don't know if you guys watch sports, but they won the Super Bowl recently, which makes them the world champions of all sports.
I don't understand. Why is this owl so good? This superb owl? What makes it so?
Rest in peace, tree bro. Really?
How did that shit taste?
Oh, it was delicious. I mean, it was all the better when there were literally 3 million Philadelphians in the streets. And you sort of, you know, it was, there were a lot of leftists who were like, you know, it's too bad we couldn't get people out to, you know, do this sort of thing for a political thing. But I felt the opposite. I was like, this is insanely, it shows how fragile, like, the city government and the state is. The city was totally overwhelmed with just insane people, and all we needed to do was win a Super Bowl. Like we could definitely do that again.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think the cops are gonna like do the same. They're not gonna treat people who are like riding over the Super Bowl the same way they're gonna treat like a popular uprising.
No, but a popular uprising would include the people like that were eating shit.
Oh, can you imagine a provisional government?
That would be our troops.
Yeah, the Lenin is just. It's like Dundalk guys, Lenin.
But all those cops in Philadelphia, the reason they're not going to crack heads there is because they all have, on one arm, they've got the eagle tattoo and then the Nazi eagle tattoo on the other arm.
Well, it's just one tattoo.
Yeah.
No, but it's the Nazi eagle wearing a Ron Jaworski jersey. I still argue that they're the regular racists and the Patriots are the fascist racists. Right. And obviously the correct position is to root for Philly.
Right.
You heard it here first, folks. Amber Frost supporting racism.
I like the idea that the Nazi eagle, like, he defected to America like before Hitler committed suicide, and as part of Operation Paperclip, they're like, we have a job for you.
You're do jello shots in the parking lot.
No, you're going to be a football logo. You're going to be the Eagles logo. We're going to give you cosmetic surgery. But I did. That was one of the best. What you just brought up, Amber.
That was beautiful.
It was, oh man, Philadelphia people are amazing because I like was watching local Philly broadcast like a year or two ago, and they interview this woman in the parking lot, and they're like, so tell us what you're here for. And she's like, ah, yeah, my baby girl just died, and so we're doing jello shots in the parking lot for leukemia. And it's like,
that's the resilience of the human spirit.
It is like, it's like, funny that like people are doing like gel, but it is like that's incredibly resilient. Like that's like Stalingrad. That's amazing. Yeah, yeah.
before we get into the, you know, less serious topics than sports, Philadelphia is now world champions, right. But for some reason the world is continuing the charade of another sporting event that's going on right now where they compete for some reason, even though the outcome is already determined and Philadelphia won. Just real quick, guys. Matt, Felix, you guys watched the Olympic opening ceremony, the Winter Olympics ceremony, the Parade of Nations. What were your thoughts?
My thoughts were this was just another piece of evidence that China will destroy us all, because the Beijing opening ceremony has proved it was a show of force. It was a show of social solidarity and power, and no people have come close to matching it since then. In this one, they tried to do like a little the human, you know, grouping thing that they did in Beijing, but with a fraction of the number of people, a fraction of the choreography. It was set. It was virgin Olympic opening ceremonies to the Chad opening ceremonies of Beijing.
China's opening ceremony the other year incorporated 13.8 billion people. And meanwhile, it was like watching a community theater production, frankly, compared to China. But the walkouts, I guess, no one really stunned me. It's the only
not even the Tongan guy.
Tongan guy was pretty wet.
That like, was like too that. Much.
He was very moist. Like, he was
we
a
get
moist
it.
Boy.
You're very attractive, but like you would be like a slippery fish. There's nothing I could do with that.
Well, he's presumably not wearing the oil in his day-to-day life.
That's what you think.
Yeah, but you're trying to conceptualize this thing, and it's just like, ew, it's very gross.
Mostly, whenever I watch the opening ceremonies, I just watch the little micronations. And I just get annoyed.
Micronation, Rodney.
And I'm like, why do you exist, Andorra? Get over your fucking self.
Oh, yeah.
You should just be absorbed. You should all be absorbed. Your precious little boutique. It's basically like, oh, we're like colonial Williamsburg, but we're going to have passports. Fuck you. You should just be part of the surrounding country.
I actually disagree. I think the big countries have to get over themselves, and we should have 300,000 small countries. I think the entire world should sort of be like the breakup of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. I don't care. Figure it out.
The future of fandom is niche, and so is the future of nation states
exactly.
as well.
For me, it's just the reason it's annoying is what is almost always the case is it's somebody with dual citizenship who lives somewhere else and is from there. But sucks and can't make the Olympic team there. So they go and they're like, oh, I'm also from Monaco or whatever, so that they can walk in their Bermuda shorts in the thing and then get hosed. You shouldn't even just so you can wave a stupid flag.
This is an entire industry, actually.
Matt was booing.
Selling passports to it's very big with gymnasts. So that they can compete at the Olympic level.
Yeah.
Because they're not good enough.
They're not good enough.
Stay
home.
Matt,
stay home.
Matt was the only person who didn't clap at the end of Cool Runnings.
You're embarrassing yourself.
It's a tiny team. Who cares?
Yeah. This is pathetic.
I mean, we went through the entire ceremony and I don't know. We saw a lot of those former Eastern European states where they love being Nazis, their PM is a Roomba, like, you know, they seemed happy to be there, and it's honestly like whatever you guys get up to over there,
whatever keeps
this is about
busy.
Coming together, yeah.
Whatever keeps them from pogroming everyone else. It's the Winter Olympics too, and that's like Felix, weren't you telling me it was like Al Roker that said it was?
No, it was Brian Gumbel who got in trouble a while back for saying correctly that it's reverse affirmative action for white athletes.
Oh, 100%. 100%. If you look at the Summer Olympics, it's all like amazing sports that require supreme coordination and ability. It's like judo, weightlifting, boxing, gymnastics.
Look, I like curling, but it is bowling for fat Norskies.
Yeah. Yeah. All
which is also bowling.
What are the Winter Olympic events? It's like playing Jenga.
Come on. The Winter Olympic event, they all... Everyone but curling requires incredible athletes.
Well, hockey. There's hockey. Cool.
No, yeah. All of them do.
I think figure skating is by
figure. Yeah, literally by anyone who's figure skating. You see children do it all the time.
I like figure skating as an ultra gay homo, but it's not a sport.
No,
it
because
requires it's incredible athletic ability.
Yeah, so does ballet. Ability, but so does
you,
ballet.
You
it's
lead
not
to
a
bunch of assholes to determine whether you did a good enough job.
I don't believe in creating a competitive kind of basis for something that is essentially a fancy art form.
Yeah, exactly. You're trying to create you're putting a number on something that is unquantifiable, so it's not really a sport. Well, I just found out, though, speaking about affirmative action for white people, only two countries in history have, from below the equator, have won a medal at the Winter Olympics. You can guess what they are.
Australia?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
The white settler colonies are the only ones that have won Olympic medals.
Yeah. What did they win?
Yeah, the Winter Olympics, settler colonialism.
Yeah, basically.
Here first.
Yeah.
Nice.
But just real quick, let's go around. What's everyone's favorite Winter Olympic event?
Biathlon.
Stole my thunder right
rules.
Underneath me.
Is that the one with the gun on
you're
on
shooting
the skis,
and skiing. It's simulating the winter war, basically, between Finland and Russia. It rules.
It's
everyone's just LARPing as the White Death and hiding in trees and sniping Nazis.
It's Scandinavian gang shit.
That's how you do a drive-by.
I was going to say biathlon because it crosses shooting and cross-country skiing. I mean, that's niche, but I love it. Since Matt said biathlon, I'm going to go two-man luge, where it's just you're literally on a tiny sled, and it's just
that's
a
terrifying.
Man lying down and then another man lying on top of his dick.
Get in the tube really with me, homie.
You get I honestly think that the guy on top stays anchored just by having like the dick fit perfectly into the butt socket.
Yeah,
area.
It's an erotic spooning at high speed.
And and they're going like 110 miles an hour.
Yeah,
so it's like
it's extreme spooning.
Yeah. That's the best way to have sex, in my opinion.
Do you guys know what soaking is?
No.
Oh,
it's something that Mormons do where they will like...
Oh,
the
right.
man will like leave his dick in the woman's pussy for like 2 hours. Just
this is copulant
anything.
Theory.
It's just like tantric sex, though, isn't it?
Not even. They're not even moving. They're just like...
It's copulant theory.
Yeah.
What?
So she can... Whatever Mormon thetans can infect his penis or something. There's a lot of weird pseudoscience behind it. It's cool.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But I mean, that's obviously my favorite Winter Olympic event. My second favorite.
Mormons, I bet, are great at Winter Olympics.
Oh my God. That's all they do.
Yeah.
All they do is go on skiing vacations and shit and make like little interactive photo albums on Facebook with a song you can't turn off. But my favorite, I would have to say probably like snowboarding or skiing for the same reasons. And it's that. All the competitors of those sports are just like fucking happy little working dogs. They have such vacant, they're so happy. They have no internal monologue or anxieties or fears. They just, like when they're walking out, you saw them this year and every year, they're just looking up at the roof of the arena like, oh, I can run all around here. They are so dumb and beautiful and happy. It's really nice. I think it's nice that we have that event for those people.
Yeah.
It's nice
give
that we did
a chance
them.
To shine. I would say figure skating, but again, not a sport. But I like watching
it's
it more.
It's the premier event of the Winter Olympics.
Yeah, I don't know how that doesn't count.
Yeah.
It's not a sport. It's an art. So I think instead I will actually go with curling because I like any sport you can hold a beer while doing.
Yeah, I do.
I also like bocce, horseshoes, bowling.
Oh, bocce is great.
The stout Midwestern heroes of curling are always fun to root for.
They should create an entirely new Olympics just for things that are like kind of not really sports, like curling, shuffleboard,
bowling. Do you see this curling guy?
Yeah, games.
He looks like you and Fat Damon had a baby, Matt.
Oh, yeah, that's that. What's his name? Peterson or his the brothers, the mixed curling team, the U.S. mixed curling team is brother sister, and they look like extras from Fargo. It's pretty cool.
All right, well, I'm going to say, if figure skating is not allowed, I'm going to say ice dancing and take the...
You're going to go gayer than me?
Yeah, no, ice dancing is unbelievable, and I watched that last night. Yeah, they can do all that.
Yeah.
And the judging of it, I don't know, somebody was mad about the fact that they're judged, but the judging was insane. The judge was like, well, you see, they came around the corner there, and the one blade was 4 inches too close to their partner's blade as they did a triple axel, so they're going to get docked points for that, which is just like, I don't know, that's impressive.
It is impressive. I just don't think it's a sport.
It's a sport.
Just best of luck to all the countries, you know? Everyone play hard.
Except Croatia. fuck to the Croat dog. Serbia will rise again.
I can't wait for probably we're going to have the Olympics the world deserves in 4 years, where every the entire world is Greater Serbia. And it's just different districts of Greater Serbia competing against each other. You know, Serbia, Middle East, Serbia, Antarctica, just all the Serbia franchises. Entire world covered in Serbia.
So, yeah, that's the sports report for today. Let's move on to some less serious issues of life, death, and politics in the United States. So I know you guys saw about it this week. It was one of my favorite things. The inauguration of a new group.
Movement.
A new movement. Yeah, a new grassroots movement to change the way healthcare exists in America and ensure that all Americans have access to quality healthcare, quality, affordable healthcare. I'm talking, of course, about the United States of Care Lords.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The ones who are going to save us from the twin horrors of Republican austerity and
Democratic austerity.
No. The Republican austerity and the overly political horror of single payer. It's too political. Right. People get all riled up and political about it. And then that you don't want that. You want a non-political solution to healthcare. That's what they're going to give us. With the help of Andy fucking Richter.
Soy Bumblebee Man. And I'm John Toon. And I'm current United States Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And we're all part of the United States of Care.
I saw this because John Favestar of Pod Save America.
An absolute chump and rube of the highest order.
Who, you know, is someone who claims, you know, both on his show and in public that he's a big
Imagine
supporter.
Imagine not even being the coolest John Favreau.
Yeah. He says he supports Medicare for all, and he wants that, but he has also lent his name and platform to this United States of Care, again, grassroots activist legitimate
which has
movement.
Which says that it has no policies yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's got blue sky in it.
Why are you criticizing it?
Whatever ideas we can bring together with Andy Richter and the Pod Save America asshole and Bill Frist. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of healthcare insurance executives. I bet they're going to cook up something wonderful.
Well, what are the three highly specific principles again,
United States of Care?
Yeah, hit us with this shit.
Are one?
Turn my headphones up.
Affordable source of care.
Nice.
Every American should have an affordable, regular source of care for themselves and their families.
Love affordable. The word affordable.
Yeah.
Like de Blasio's affordable housing. Right, yeah. The word affordable.
Like affordable doesn't radically differ depending on a person's income.
Did my grandmother make this? It's very affordable lunch.
If your term
lunch.
Is for affordable, then you're already talking means testing because right. you'd have to because it's some people can afford more than others.
Yep.
You're already opening the can of shit worms that got us the ACA, which has already been gutted and was highly unpopular and helped lead to the destruction of the Democratic majority in this 1,000-year Reich we're currently beginning.
Did they have some focus group with people who like got lost in the lobby of the Land's End headquarters a few years ago? Because affordable, yeah, it's literally in the name of their signature bill.
It's and a it's just bullshit such a, word.
It's
my friend saying, actually, Diane von Furstenberg has really good sales, Amber, when they're trying to get me to blow money on a dress.
Yeah, it affordable tastes in your mouth like tap water you left in your room for 3 days. It has those weird little bubbles on
it. It's like, imagine somebody wanted to... Somebody,
I feel like I'm being
talk,
microaggressed right now for my tap water consumption.
How long do you think I keep it out?
Somebody's trying to talk you into coming to a restaurant, and you're like, I don't know, it's a little far away, and they go, it's affordable. That's not an enticement.
Well, no, the focus group was probably like, do you guys like affordable healthcare, or do you like taxes?
Yeah.
Because if those are your options...
Yeah.
You know it's not a tax? Paying $300 a month to Jared Kushner's brother for insurance you can only get covered if you literally have a 2x4 sticking out of your forehead. You can only go to hospitals where you're wrapped up with all your homies and your leg is elevated and you're in a full body cast with one eye peeking out.
And you still got to pay $5,000 in deductibles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It covers pellagra and miner's lung, and that's it.
And you're like, damn, this shit's affordable as fuck.
I'm not technically bankrupt yet.
Care Lord principle number two, protection from financial devastation. all Americans should be protected from financial devastation because of illness or injury.
How does that differ from the first
principle?
That's
the best part, is that they're assuming that even you can achieve number one, but number two is a separate principle.
Yeah.
Because if we have affordable care, we might still have financial devastation. So we need to make that.
Right.
The brain trust, the PR people were sitting around, they were like, oh, okay, so what do we stand for? And then they say what they really do, and they're like, can we pad this out to three?
It's
the rule of three.
It's the comedy rule of threes.
Yeah, there is a big internal debate between Count Chocula and Trent Lott over whether they should say it's good or bad if people get wiped out financially.
Well, right. They also, like, again, the word devastation, it's just like, people are getting crunched in like horrible ways, and you can say they're not technically devastated. Like, there's a lot of wiggle room with devastation.
Yeah. Yeah,
you can just say,
bankrupt.
Oh, you're not destitute and homeless.
Yeah, you lost one leg, you got the other one though. You can hop around.
And I guess minor medical bankruptcy is okay under principle two.
Yeah, if you can file chapter seven, it's
right.
fine.
It's fine if you can get yourself out of minor medical bankruptcy, but utter devastation.
It's like, as long as Jude Law from that shitty Repo Man movie doesn't literally come to take the organ that they transplanted into you, then you're fine.
No one will repossess your organs. That's the subtext for that.
I'm already wet after this.
In this magic trick, you've now seen The Pledge, The Turn. Here is The Prestige.
Woo.
Third principle. Political and economic viability.
Policies, now you're talking, homie.
Policies to achieve these aims must be fiscally responsible and win the political support needed to ensure long-term stability.
The support of whom?
Buddy, you already greased up my boy pussy with politically viable.
Wait a minute,
got to financially or fiscally responsible. Oh my God.
Hold on a minute. I'm
secretions.
Confused. Because the other thing that they say over and over again on that page is that their real goal is to take politics out of healthcare, to make it not political, to put people, not politics.
Here's the very first thing in their mission statement says, the mission of United States of Care is to ensure that every single American has access to blah, blah, blah. And he goes, a new nonpartisan nonprofit, we are building and mobilizing a movement to achieve long-lasting solutions that make healthcare better for everyone. United States of Care will make that happen by working with Americans from across the country, policymakers, physicians, and other clinicians, caregivers, and business. And he goes, we must change the conversation and create a new narrative that puts healthcare over politics by redefining the goal in human, not political terms.
Because politics is conceived and carried out by a series of robots that we've built.
And supporting a positive, practical, and lasting approach. There is also a frequently asked questions section that I also checked out.
I just want to say that anybody who reads that and signs up, I can excuse a dullard like Andy Richter or whatever other moron celebrities they got on this thing.
Yeah, a man who wipes his ass with live rabbits.
Right. Like, oh, I want to make it good, too. It's not politics. But anybody who works in politics or claims to know anything about it, like Favreau, they should be fucking driven into the sea for that kind of malpractice.
Because
to say that anything that involves the distribution of scarce resources can be taken away from the political, you literally don't understand what those words mean.
Because they underestimate people. They know what it means. It's entirely cynical. It's 100% cynical.
That's true. People don't like politics.
Right,
they like humans.
Politics is bad. Humans are good.
It's like the boilerplate thing of like, yeah, let's get those Washington fat cats out of here.
Yeah.
It's like it's like the populism that you would have on like a children's cartoon. It's very surface level and lame. But I think the most telling thing about it is that it's sort of stuck in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
It's like something that would be in some sort of like Reform Party campaign ad, you know. Let's get politics out of all of this stuff. Politics is rotten.
There's
and
too
nasty.
Much politics in these politics.
That is such like intergenerational warfare is reactionary, but that is such Gen X and boomer mindset when you're like, oh, politics is, but hey, do you know that poly means many and ticks means bugs? What's the opposite of Congress? Progress? And it just that sort of like limp dick apathy, but it's still moralizing.
It's a loss of faith in an actual like populism, and it's honestly it displays such like a contempt for people, like to believe that they're stupid enough to swallow this and that you have to like wrap this turd in sugar and they'll eat it up.
Now, I was following this and I was following Fave Star's reactions to all this because a lot of people who are Pod Save America fans were actually
upset
by this, and they were like, hey, like, if you why don't you support an actual Medicare for All campaign? There are many grassroots groups right now organizing around this very issue. Like, why are you signing on to what is obviously like an astroturf attempt by the health insurance industry to claw back their profits from a potentially
because
popular alternative?
Seeing,
now, let me just finish. What Favreau said is he's saying, look, it's going to be until at least 2020 until we can have any kind of positive movement. Like, at the very least, 2020 until we're going to have any kind of positive change as regards to healthcare. And we have enough people to actually support, make Medicare for All a reality. So he says, I support that. But until then, I'm going to do everything possible to like help people and make everyone's life better. And this group is just one way to do that. Like, we're open to all things and all solutions. And hey, like,
yeah, this isn't something that's in direct competition with a far more popular and far more progressive plan.
Well, I mean, he would say like, what? I can't work with people who I don't agree with to do something positive, but they never actually say what that something positive is.
Did you see the list? That's one thing they accomplished.
I'll just read
three things.
One more thing here from the frequently asked questions section. Why do you support principles instead of naming policies? The reply is,
oh, I love that leading ass question. Why do you believe in things instead of stupid policies?
But he goes, the response here is, we launched with a focus on principles to keep open the largest range of potential solutions. By remaining focused on the outcome versus getting attached to a single policy ideas from the outset, we believe we can better find a path forward. We will evaluate policy ideas on their merits and alignment with our principles and their ability to make healthcare more accessible and affordable to everyone. Part of our work in evaluating and creating policies will be done in partnership with Penn LDI. This week, we published a paper evaluating several recent state-level attempts to provide healthcare coverage to more people, including single-payer, buy-in, and expansion policies. This review is the first step in our partnership, and we will do additional studies on multiple approaches, including examining costs.
We're really just in a fact-finding phase right now.
Yeah.
However, the principle-based system is not inherently wrong.
Right,
except the principles have to be actual principles. Yeah. And actually, Dino, if you want to talk about the DSA.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's kind of funny because we did the same thing. If you go to medicareforall.dsausa.org.
Yeah, like it is actually kind of funny because it sounds like they
copied us.
They copied us.
But we have five. And
we got five. You're talking. You have five tool campaign.
We spent the entire DSA budget on those last two principles.
Worth it.
But our principles are actually like they help explain what a Medicare for All system means, and it's important programmatically and education wise to do something like this. But we actually say we want a single health program that everybody is covered. We want comprehensive coverage for everybody. We want it free at the point of service. We want universal coverage, and we want a jobs program to have a just transition. But all of those things, unfortunately, are very political, and they require political mobilization and political organization.
You can't get a bunch of stakeholders together to hash it out behind closed doors?
Well, you know, look, I think that politics is really best when you get a bunch of elite Harvard-educated folks to talk on a nice, slick website to try to convince people of their policies. So that's what we're actually going to do. We invited Jon Favreau, and he's going to now be in our camp. And he's going to do a podcast next week talking about why Medicare for All and is better than US of Care. So we think that'll work.
I mean, I think that the larger issue here is I think we should, I mean, the United States of Care Lords is laughable, and any effort that has on its board of director Douglas Holtz Eakin and Bill Frist is not going to produce any even cosmetically positive result for any person who needs healthcare in this country.
No.
How do you know that Bill Frist hasn't had a huge ideological shift over the past 2 years? You don't know. He could have Rose Emoji in his display name on his secret Twitter right now.
Those cats that he tortured to death as a child came back to him like Marley. Screwed. he had a revelation.
The broader point, though, is I think that we should look at the fact that the United States of Care exists as a very positive sign. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they are clearly, and this is why people are rightly, even his fans, are angry at Favreau, is because this is obviously an attempt to forestall any kind of Medicare for all, yep, or even a public option in healthcare. Yep. This is a transparent attempt by the health insurance industry to forestall the growing popularity and political reality of something that would claw back their profits.
Because this is a classic example of sort of reaction kind of shooting itself in the foot by just not taking yes for an answer. Obamacare was the only viable, right, free market reform to healthcare that could plausibly be said to increase access and affordability and stuff. And it was hated by half of the population for ideological and material and reasons, and hated by, and then
it was
destroyed,
certainly hated by anyone who had to use it.
Well, also hated by people, and it disillusioned anyone who was supposed to help because it was shitty and it left a bunch of people uninsured and other people forced to get coverage that they couldn't afford. But it's the only way. And so now that it's collapsing, the mandate's gone, no one thinks it's viable. Mm-hmm. We're in a situation, and Republicans say this, and they're right. Like Lindsey Graham waddles out and says, I'm afraid now that the only alternative is the single payer. Yes, it is. And so these guys are basically just going to try to Frankenstein Obamacare again.
Yep.
Like, because all the things they're talking about, or anything you're going to talk about in terms of, it's all just going to be subsidies.
Right. It's
they're more committed to half measures than they are any politics whatsoever.
It's going to be rabbit season and duck season forever. There'll be a blue wave. They'll get in there and there'll be some new harebrained shit that will still help a lot of people because the current system is so fucking bad. By default, any marginal improvement will help a fair amount of people, but just not nearly enough. People will still go bankrupt, and that change will always be something like,
and if,
you know, we're gonna license the Uber software for fucking ambulances. We're gonna force you to keep a savings account to pay your co-pays and shit. And then it's gonna be duck season again. The Republicans are gonna get in there, and yeah, they'll do the running man.
Speaking of Uber, though, thank you for bringing this up.
You are welcome.
Anytime.
I'll always bring them up.
I'm giving
up
a shout out to Twitter user at Liking Online, who did a deep dive on the guy. The main force behind this is this guy, Andy Slavik, who.
Slavit.
Yeah, that's it.
Slavit.
Slavit. Who was a point man in fighting against ACA repeal and like has some goodwill on the left.
Saved
the center
website,
left because of that.
Savedhealthcare.gov.
Right, yeah. And
we all
so,
love that website,
yeah,
too.
Right. And he's the guy. Yes, he saved the website. And yeah, that he's the guy that sort of Lovett is pointing out to is like, hey, this is, you know, this is the real
My
deal.
My friend Andy's involved, yeah, in it, and I'm happy to support anything he does.
Exactly. Yeah. And this guy is also an investor. And one of the things he's investing in is a new fund that puts money into healthcare startups that are built on underserved communities.
Yes.
This is sort of like micro loans for healthcare,
underserved communities,
which, as we all know, led to thousands of Indian farmers jumping into wells when they couldn't pay back their micro loans.
Hi, I'm Montel Williams. And
so
I'm Andy Slavin.
This is from an article from Med City News that Liking Online found. And it talked to Slavitt about his investments. One of them was in a company called Circulation Health, which is a non-emergency transportation company to get patients to medical appointments. And Slavitt pointed out that the common theme these companies has is that they provide much-needed services behind their technologies. Quote, there is room for cool innovation. What is Airbnb doing? What are all those companies doing? They logistically give people more opportunities. These are companies that are about improving people's lives. Is Uber a tech company? Is Airbnb a tech company? In a manner of speaking, yes, but they are, but it's really about identifying services to make people's lives better. So Uber and Airbnb for healthcare.
I know that what I want in a healthcare experience is that it is cool and innovative.
Yeah, that you could just go into a hospital and get fucking fixed.
Speak for yourself. I want to revolutionize healthcare in the way that SoulCycle changed cycling classes.
It's
I
the
want
poochification a nightclub of healthcare is, yeah, what they're trying to do right now.
I want nightclub quality music. I want a cool environment of other young professionals. When the doctor comes in with his little one-piece headset and is like, all of you have to stop eating golden brown foods or you're going to die. Your stomachs can't take it.
But Lovett says, well, we can't do anything positive until 2020, so we have to do something in the meantime. Well, nothing, creating this shit is not going to change the dynamics in White House and in the White and funding and in the Congress. What it's going to do is maybe provide something for people running in 2020 to point to and say Medicare for All is a good goal, but we're not there yet, and this is a good alternative.
Right.
That's what this exists to provide.
Yeah, I think it's really important to realize that I don't think that United States of Care, I mean, they've gotten hammered since they came out, rightfully so, from the left, which I think is excellent. But I don't think they really care about winning any sort of popular support. Their aim is elite politicians. Yep. Their aim is to say, to point to Democrats and, you know, arguably Republicans, as their website claims, and say, hey, here's a triangulation point. We know you can't support Medicare for All, but you can support our three vague principles, and that's a triangulation point for you to say, I'm thinking about it, I'm researching it, but I'm really on board with Mr. What's his name?
Slavitt.
Slavitt, which is a great name.
Very Dickensian.
We can do a lot of things with that
Dino, I think that's a great point, though. I mean, this is aimed at convincing Democratic politicians, and it's aimed at creating to give them some kind of cover to like say to their base, which is increasingly more and more in favor of something like Medicare for All or even single payer or even how about nationalized health care?
That's the only way we're going to rebuild health care in rural areas, by the way.
National health, it should be the goal. That is the absolute best way to go.
Of course, but like Medicare for All right now is becoming increasingly popular and like a realistic thing that could happen and would do a lot of good in the short term.
Yes.
However, it's
the biggest little reform and the littlest biggest reform.
Yeah. Wow. Yes. Running up against that, though, I just want to highlight an article that was in Vox this week. The headline is, it's by Dylan Scott, and the headline is, Why Donald Trump Makes Democratic Voters Uneasy About Medicare for All. And I think this is an interesting piece to highlight because it's interesting to sort of suss out what's going on here. It's about a poll that was – let me just start reading here. Rick, a 54-year-old school teacher who lives in Washington, D.C. area, believes in American institutions. He voted for Hillary Clinton. He supports Obamacare, and he believes healthcare is a universal right. Democrats believe in healthcare. Barack Obama – They quote Rick as saying, anyone here in this focus group with me, like, I would help you just like I would help my own family because I think that's supposed to be representative of what our nation is about. And his belief in healthcare as a human universal right is indicative of that. A single payer healthcare gains currency in Democratic circles. Opinion researcher Michael Perry gathered two focus groups of 8 Clinton voters last fall to interrogate
16 people.
Yeah, 16 Clinton voters.
All who voted for Clinton.
On the cutting edge of the party.
Yeah.
The lady who said it'll never, ever happen.
Interrogate what ordinary rank-and-file Democrats think about single-payer and other proposals to expand the Medicare program to Americans. But surprisingly, some of these Democrats do not fully buy into a Medicare for All plan. Blame Donald Trump. Rick said he's seen President Trump's administration chip away at the Affordable Care Act after seizing power. His faith in the government's ability to deliver dependable health care has been shaken. Before this particular administration, I had a lot more trust in the government, whether I agreed with what they had or not. I'm comfortable with a system that is run by the government, and I would have said that without equivocating, Rick told us, but right now, I'm a little iffy about it. He wasn't alone. I was going to say the same thing, said Ken, a 66-year-old consultant. Which government? The rational American government in the past 3 decades I felt pretty good about, but Ken wasn't so sure about Donald Trump's government. Trump's election has left a lot of liberals unmoored. They don't have quite the same faith in democratic norms or institutions that they used to. The fact that Trump could be elected at all and dispense with the parts of Obamacare he disagrees with has shown them the fraying seams of our political system.
You guys, we can't get a 66-year-old consultant on board, we might have to.
We're blackpilled, they added. Read submission.
Yes. Who can forget the logical, reasonable government that went to war in Iraq because fucking Colin Powell held a flashlight under his chin and told scary stories?
You know what, though? We shouldn't
criticize. Dracula lives in fucking Baghdad.
I'm glad these guys are on board for abolishing the military and the prison state.
Well, here's what.
You know, they also, the government also can't be trusted with that, right?
What did we
say? They can't
say?
Be trusted with health care. They can't be trusted with any of that.
The beginning of the year that, like, Trump and largely hand in hand with the leadership of the Democratic Party has led quote, liberal voters so far to the right that they're now like, I no longer have trust in a national health care. But what they, the institutions that they do have trust in are the fucking FBI, NSA, and CIA. They love those now more than anything, but they're a bit iffy about the, you know, any government that could have Donald Trump as a leader. I don't trust them to...
Hey, you know what? Everyone laughed when people would congratulate Marco Rubio on those third place wins in primaries. But you know what? We didn't even know it. He was getting the bye. He's automatically won the Democratic primary. Because that's all those motherfuckers now. They're all Marco Rubio.
Well, yeah, no, this is such a reactionary talking point because it's just like the Obamacare, what were those, death panels. That's exactly what this is. Like, if we have Medicare for All under Trump, the government will just, like, I don't know, just have death panels that they would have had under Obama, but Obama was a good guy, so he didn't do that.
He wouldn't have killed your grandma. Yeah. He would have killed someone's
He would have killed poor white folks is who he would have killed. Because
he would have killed Ted Nugent.
They won't execute Nana.
It's like, it's fine for him to do signature drone strikes in the morning, but then he's going to turn and he's going to write on a piece of paper that you can't get an MRI.
Also, like, I like the idea, though, that this is indicative of anyone at all. And the phrase that really jumped out at me was rank and file Democrats. Yeah. There are no rank and file Democrats. We do not have a party system where people are members of a party. Like, there's literally no such thing as a rank and
file. It's like rank and
file
Coke drinkers.
People who might register. Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's a consumer choice.
Yeah.
It's not even a political commitment. You might register as a Democrat. You can unplug anytime you want. You can vote for whoever. Like, there's no such thing. We have such an undemocratic party system that the phrase rank and file Democrats is almost insulting to use. It means nothing. Also, you only talked to 16 people and one of them was a 66-year-old consultant.
The piece goes on to lay out the increasing popularity of something like a single payer bill. They talk about Bernie Sanders has made this more and more of like a non-taboo thing to talk about. And then it gets to the end of the piece and it says, Democratic voters are receptive to an expanded Medicare program, one available on the Obamacare marketplaces. They could be receptive to a single payer program, but they will still need some more convincing. Trump's election has started to unravel their belief that the government could actually run such a system. Again, I don't even think this is true or not.
No,
but I think what we're seeing here with these efforts at polling and consulting, again, the consulting racket, which is what the Democratic Party really exists, those are the real rank and file Democrats, as it even says in this fucking piece as a consultant, is that they are, Dito, as you said, they're looking for ways out of this fix because there's nothing that they fear more than a voting base that really wants something, that really wants them to...
And that knows what they want.
That knows what they want and that would respond with scoffing and skepticism about a group that just says, our goal is to make healthcare better and we'll take anything available as long as enough people agree to it.
One of the things that we're hearing back from like the canvassing campaign for Medicare for All is that it's how shockingly easy it is.
Yeah. Oh, it's wildly popular. I mean, like the polling also is, it's one of these polling tricks where if you say, you know, they have it right here in this article, they say a single government program. And if you phrase it like that, a lot more people are like, I'm not sure. But when you say Medicare for All, it's wildly popular because people know and trust Medicare. They think that it's a good program. They have somebody they know that's on Medicare that they feel like, you know, some sort of relationship with the actual institution of the state, and a relationship with an institution of the state that does something good for you rather than, you know, ICE and the FBI and the police force. And so it's just remarkable that among Democrats, we know it's wildly popular, except for among those Democrats who are like the mysteriously only upper middle class people that were polled here, or not even polled, but self-selected for a focus group, except among them, which they don't really care about Medicare for All because they have pretty good health insurance. If you're in the upper middle class and you live in, were these people from DC? You're probably a consultant for some major NGO and have a decent health package. But if you're a worker and you're a regular person or a young person, even if you're not a particularly liberal young person, you want Medicare for All. You want free healthcare at the point of service. And the only reason to not advocate for it is because you're in the pocket of big pharma or you're in the pocket of the major industries.
Well, this is like the back to this Favreau line that like, hey, look, nothing's doing until we elect enough people to pass the legislation that we all want. And that's not happening until at least 2020. This idea that, well, like, there's literally, well, I guess we can't do anything until then.
That's like also
what you should be doing, right?
Historically untrue.
Well, what if Favreau really supports Medicare for All, he should be putting his name and effort to Medicare for All program, to activist actual grassroots groups that are organizing around this issue, not this transparently fraudulent horseshit.
It's just like not true though. Like the workers' movements in this country have historically made a lot of gains under right-wing administrations. Not lately, but it fucking happens. This idea that we have to wait for the right time to do something like build a campaign, especially when you're working in a grassroots situation where you just, I mean, in Philly and East Bay and the people I've talked to who have canvassed, even in small places, they're just scooping them up.
Yeah.
Like you just, they thought it was going to have to be a much more involved conversation canvassing. And people are just like, actually, it's been really easy. You get good doors, you get bad doors. But most of the people are like, oh yeah, definitely.
Well, and Sanders' name helps a tremendous amount because so many people, you know, I haven't seen the recent polling, but as far as I know, he's still the most popular politician in the country. And his name has so much credibility among folks when you're canvassing for Medicare for All that you just mention it and they're like, oh, Bernie's plan? Of course, I support Bernie's plan. Like, he seems like he's got the right ideas. But no, instead, we should... I mean, I think part of this comes from the fact that the way these people conceive of politics is that it happens behind closed doors with policy wonks.
Yep.
And until we can get all the policy wonks to run the right numbers, we won't agree. And so they don't even think of the mass of voters as like a potential obstacle or someone to be won over. They think that it all is going to happen in some machine that happens.
Yes.
But also,
because Lovett's big checkmate to anyone who was yelling at him the other day was, do you have a plan?
Was it Lovett or Favreau?
Whatever. Who the fuck? Who gives a shit? Yeah. They're one master blaster piece. It's like Quato and the guy. They're fused together.
Really,
Brendel Fly?
I
consider them like Migos.
Culture.
Affordable. 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 Access. Access. Access.
But whichever one of these slugs is being all pretentious and very condescending to everyone who's so naive not to understand what it takes to get things done. He says, you want this to happen, but what's your plan for achieving it? Electing a critical number of people who support it, and then they pass it. That's how it's always been done.
You also have more wiggle room than you think, or during campaign years.
Yeah.
Because once you have enough broad support for things, you can lay out a fucking red line and just be like, you do not meet these standards. And until you meet these standards, you will not get the votes. You can bully politicians.
Yeah, you create, I mean, it's happened with other issues. You create litmus tests and it's like, you can't plausibly run, you know, to these people without
gay rights supporting is a good example.
Yeah,
actually.
Abortion too.
Yeah, people were just like, no, we're drawing a fucking line in the sand, and it pushed people like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, but you fucking win elections. The liberal legacy that these guys are so proud of for the 20th century was passed basically because of two elections, 1932 and 1964. And what happened was not some behind the scenes machinations or some complicated interest group balancing. They won overwhelming majorities in the House and Senate and passed things. That's it. That's how you do it. You crush them. You defeat the forces who oppose a thing that you get enough Americans to support. That's it.
I mean, I think speaking to that same idea, it almost seems like they think that like the best solution is always this, like, if both sides are angry, then like it must be good. And they have this fundamental allergy in this United States of Care thing. They're like, look, this idea that you can remove political issues from the realm of politics. It's also this idea they have like a complete allergy to ever identifying who the enemy in this equation is.
Yeah. There's no
who are the actual malefactors that have made healthcare in this country
politics
so, so fucking bad?
Just the amorphous concept of politics.
Yeah.
Let's
it's
not
like
blame
good people
the
come together,
community.
But then politics
they're a
happens.
Community.
Politics happens, and that makes it bad. People had good intentions.
Well, no, you have to
like
understand that healthcare is extremely complicated. And anytime there's a failure, it's because it's so complicated, and we don't have enough smart people to think about how to make it better.
Yeah, that's true. It's just, it comes down to, and the thing is that when you do that thing where you say, well, both sides are mad, we're creating a compromise, what that really does is it makes people disillusioned and makes people check out, which is fine for the reactionary party because smaller electorates help them. But you're shedding people who you need And you're patting yourself on the back that you got a good compromise through, like ACA, and then, oh, wait a minute, we got clobbered in the midterms. Nobody showed up to support this. What the hell?
Because no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
So either you move or we will replace you.
Well, these...
You will not replace us.
The fundamental problem with
John Favreau going,
this kind of...
like a tiki torch.
It would be like an LED torch.
It's greener.
They're doing torches. A shield wall in front of the Aetna headquarters in glow sticks.
Yeah. They're standing in front of the Fearless Girl statue. They are trying to erase us.
Well, no, the thing about these liberal politics, though, is the big myth that they want liberals to believe, liberal voters, is that there is something of an even playing field, as if the Chamber of Commerce and the industries are not on one side of this deck. So when they act like we have to bring both sides together, which side is more powerful? Which side actually has the ability to get shit done? It's not the liberal wonks. It's going to be the Chamber of Commerce and whatever they decide is the best way forward.
And it's like, yeah, like these people, they exist to prevent anything even remotely like universal healthcare from happening.
Yeah. Well, and the technocracy angle of it is just like absolutely shocking. Like my pure anti-European chauvinism really like rears its head with this. It's like, you really think this is an issue we haven't figured it out? You really think the French are smarter than us?
excuse me, but they got universal health care by somebody doing a cartoon.
Someone drew Muhammad until they had universal health care.
Someone drew Muhammad with a thermometer for a dick, and he had like a rep bandage around his head, and it's like la malade du Islam.
there was actually like a French, you know, socialism or single payer versus public private mixed stupid system, and they did have a united estates of care, and Pepe Le Pew fulfilled the Andy Richter role.
But the idea of like an obstacle of intellect or ideas is just like so offensive to me. You talk to people, especially after Bernie, they all know. It's absurd. It's completely absurd. Well, there's not going to be popular support. We won't get the politicians on board. Like, there's more of us than them, and people are completely aware that this is a bullshit system, and we are dragging behind the world in terms of healthcare.
Here's my
barely developed countries
that have lower literacy rates than us.
Yes,
they have.
Although we have a pretty low literacy rate.
Yeah. Let's keep it that way. Let's get it lower. they just have such a low concept of people's imaginations. They seem to think of the average voter as this, you know, it's sometimes a noble savage, at other times sort of like a medieval peasant who only knows about the lands that they till and everything. Who couldn't, if you told them about like a drastically better existence, they would be like, what's next, pal? You got a bridge to sell me?
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's something people talk about all the time, is if no one had to worry about this, like maybe people's taxes were a bit higher, but like everyone was covered. No one had to think about it in this way. That's something that like increasing amounts of just normal people talk about. It fits in their purview.
But we don't need normal people, Felix. We need a Raytheon Democrat Dan. Right.
Yeah. But the thing is about those guys is that they do run whatever it means to have a Democratic Party. They run it.
Right.
And their existence in it is predicated on politics being, I guess the metaphor I would use is like retail versus wholesale. So like they have a vision of politics where it's, well, we need to get everybody together to create a policy that only wonks really understand, and then we have to pay a bunch of other people to figure out how to sell it to the 50% plus one of the population. Whereas you have another approach, wholesale politics, where what if you get a thing that's easy to understand, very big, and will drastically improve people's lives? You don't need those middlemen. Those guys are basically
it's self-justification. They're
like
it's
jewelry,
all job security.
They're like jewelry salesmen. They're like the guy in between the wholesale and you, and they're just taking the fucking profit, meaning these phony baloney jobs that allow them to become rock star fucking podcast kings like Favreau and Lovett and all those turds. They're literally parasites on the political process. And it has to stay obscure, and it has to stay...
It's all obscurantism.
It has to stay incremental. Otherwise, it's too easy. Politics is too easy.
Otherwise, they don't have a job.
Yes.
Well, and you have to paint the people who are for the simple ideas as insane radicals. So this is from an interview on CNN. Slavitt says, needled on the question of single payer, in the past, you'd support a single payer, needled on this question. What I believe is that there are a number of ideas, including new ideas that are going to be necessary to get to where we want to get. I believe that's going to take a number of years from where we are today. So for someone who believes in single payer, Medicare for all, I hope that you can also be for other things that are good for people. And that those things might even build the ability to get there.
Drivel.
This is neoliberal Mad Libs. Neoliberal Mad Libs.
That was nothing. That was just like oatmeal. It was just a bowl.
Common sense solutions.
You got to give solutions to get solutions. But to have solutions, you have to start with solutions in yourself. Are you going to give solutions?
If they hadn't cut him off, he would have started talking about the respect economy.
It literally is
it's the
just
ideas
respect.
Economy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I do acknowledge that he rightfully acknowledges that there are indeed ideas.
And can't
even,
argue with that.
Even new ones. You can't
yeah, like
argue with that.
Drone striking nursing homes.
This is like
that'd be a very bold way to save
innovative.
Money on healthcare.
This
innovative.
This sort of like word salad. It's like a husband fucking up, but not in a big enough way that it immediately ends in divorce. But like, you know, he commented on a 26-year-old girl's Instagram and was like, "Hey, trouble." And he's like, this is just the word salad of an in trouble man. Sometimes certain solutions have priorities that are on top of ideas. But when those priorities face other ideas on the horizon, we want to bring ideas to that horizon at the moment. And when I said you're so tiny, it wasn't flirtatious.
It's all about communication.
Yeah, it's all about communication. It's about
respect.
Respect, get mutual respect. That's the big thing. You know, separate bathrooms, mutual respect. Ideas, you have to have ideas in a marriage to save a marriage. To save a marriage, you have to sort of bring it to the brink.
There are a lot of ways to be married. There are new ways to be married.
Yeah.
I hope that if you're for marriage, you will also be for other things. You know, alternatively, if folks are not interested in USF Care Lords, I would suggest that they get involved with DSA's Medicare for All campaign. And, you know, right now we have over 70 DSA locals, four of which were just canvassing yesterday, and a sizable portion of what is a now nearly 36,000 strong membership in the organization. So if you want to get involved, go to medicareforall.dsausa.org. You can check out our five principles. We've got two more than US of Care, and none of them overlap. So also, if you're a DSA local, has already endorsed the campaign, you can sign up there. If you're not a DSA member, you can also sign up, and we can bring you in to socialism. So please check out the website. And I also just want to recognize Megan Swoboda and Ben Fong, who are on the organizing subcommittee and have been doing a fantastic job getting out our organizing kits, which include everything that you need for your local chapter to get started. So if you want an organizing kit, please go to the website. And soon we will be doing a matching campaign. So if your local does not have the money to afford an organizing kit, we will be hopefully raising money for matching kits to send to smaller locals and especially college chapters around the country.
We got shirts.
What's in the kit?
Yeah, so
tell me more about the kit.
In the kit, everybody loves kits, you know. Inside the kit, you get a Medicare for All organizing guide, which was written by the campaign committee. You get five of those. You get 120 beautiful, glossy pamphlets, which will help explain to people this extremely complicated idea of free healthcare at the point of service. You get five t-shirts, you get 20 stickers for canvassing, 40 pins, and a bunch of petitions to go out and start collecting signatures. Because actually, the way to change politics is to get people to know about a program, get them on your side. Because it turns out most workers are pretty progressive, and they actually want Medicare for All. So it's not too hard to do. So please do get involved.
And yet, none of that is going to end imperialism, so don't do it. I wanted to address this. This is something that I've seen coming up. People are saying, I don't know about this Medicare for All movement. Uh-oh, people, you're just leaving imperialism there. You're just going to have an imperial hell state with universal health care. Then where are you? And I think people need to realize, people who are not extremely online, people who do not make politics their lives, who do not interact with politics as a way to like create a sense of self-worth and a sense of purpose, like
normies.
Yeah, exactly.
The best the best definition for normies is people who don't make their politics into an identity.
Right, and those people,
I've heard that we should kill them.
Respond. Those people respond to politics through the lens of self-interest, and they vote on self-interest, or they don't vote because they perceive correctly, usually, that it doesn't matter to their self-interest if they vote or not. They need to be engaged and turned on. And nothing is a better way to start that conversation. Nothing is a better entry point to getting somebody politically engaged and saying, we can, this healthcare system that is crushing you, like it crushes everyone, can be different. We can make it so that you have the benefit, the tangible benefit of living in a place where you can get free at the point of service healthcare, and how much that can help you and your family's lives. And that starts a conversation. And then maybe you wonder, well, wait a minute, why haven't we had this before? Then you can start talking about how we have more people incarcerated in this country than the rest of the world. We have military bases in 170 fucking countries.
Then you can tell them the truth about Syria.
Yeah, exactly. But you have to start somewhere. And the defeatist sort of the cynical criticism of healthcare canvassing that it doesn't take these things into account. If you start with those things, you're not starting on the basis that normal people really act to politics, which is self-interest. But if you start and a thing that people understand and that will benefit them, it opens up a conversation that can move. Maybe not. Maybe it won't. Maybe we'll be Nazi Germany with healthcare. But maybe we won't. And the only way forward, the only way possible for that to happen, is if we start these conversations with normal people, energize them, make them realize politics can benefit them, and then from there build solidarity that is broader and that moves beyond the horizons of what we think is possible.
You can't get someone's car out of the ditch just by giving it more gas. And by gas, I mean posts about imperialism. No. But no, I don't know. Yeah, I am sympathetic to the idea that we don't talk about imperialism nearly enough. I mean, one of the most brutally effective propaganda campaigns of the last generation was the post 9/11 propaganda campaign, because it was shit like 24, but it was also shit like Homeland at Zero Dark 30 that imparted imperial mindset on just sort of the normie to NPR tote bag crowd. But Matt's completely right. You're not going to deprogram them, all the normies, just by telling them the thing that they avoid thinking about the most on purpose is bad. They know it's bad. That's why they don't think about it. But they're beaten down and they're not engaged. So 2019, we're going to fix all the problems. I know I said 2018.
I feel it.
But more pushing it back a little bit.
We're getting our ducks in a row. 2018 is all about ducks.
2018, healthcare. We're going to get healthcare tone. 2019, imperialism.
Absolutely. Gone.
2020... something
2020,
that
2020 will be kink shaven out here.
2020, Russ is going to make a song about Me Too.
I don't know who that is.
All right, he's so Italian. He's a rapper.
To close things out today, I feel, you know, we talked a lot about healthcare today, but I want to have, just want to switch gears slightly and just talk about my other favorite thing other than the United States of Care Lord that happened this week. Folks, I'm feeling like Jesse. This week.
Feeling like Ferrar.
Remember when John McCain in 2008 said, we are all Georgians? This week, we are all Ferrars.
Yeah.
We are all Jessies.
A lot of Jesse come latelys this year.
I'm sort of a Jesse come lately, but you know.
If you've been a Ferrar fanatic for a few years, you've seen him piss
the
off.
The Philly Ferrar.
Yeah. You've seen Jesse Ferrar piss off everybody. You have seen him anger, you know, microbrewers. You've seen him anger mom bloggers. Just anyone.
The Democrat rank and filers.
But he's topped himself, boys.
There, for anyone
he's given himself top.
Possibly not even familiar with this. This happened this week where Jesse at Bronzehammer replied to a Charlie Kirk tweet about Turning Point USA's campus conservatism. And he said college Republicans should have their heads held underwater until they drown. And then Charlie Kirk was like, wow, this is terrible. I can't believe you think this is funny. And then he just replied again, I am not joking. And this became like the cause of the week for like all bullshit campus culture war shit. So much so that they were talking about it on Fox and Friends. And I think now the perfect denouement to Weird Twitter is that we are now 1,000% certain that Donald Trump was angry at a Bronzehammer tweet during this week's morning executive time.
Yeah, Kelly had to riddle him with 15 trank darts to stop him from tweeting. The sloppy Jesse Farrar is at it again.
Nobody, Go Off Kings is a garbage stream. No one watches it. Jesse's not even good at those games.
The interesting thing to me is that from what I observed, these weren't kind of disingenuous reactions. These weren't people being cynical and being like, look what he said. They thought that he meant it.
Yeah.
Well, that's Jesse's talent is that you can't really, it's never people really doing fake outrage to Jesse. It's like he really does push those buttons.
He gets people mad.
Because there's nothing you can do to him.
Yeah, well,
you can't really do shit to him.
Well, they tried to. It's so funny. He has in the past written for Deadspin, and I think that's why it all started, because he's got the blue check mark, and they thought, we can shame the liberal media for their hypocrisy. And he hasn't written in Deadspin for a while, but they still contacted that fucking editor at Deadspin.
Barry Pachesky. Shout out, Barry.
Because the instinct on both sides, the instinct of narc scumbags from both sides do it in terms of mainstream politics, is getting people fired. It's the only meaningful practice.
You do that, by the way. You are a class enemy.
Absolutely.
Unless you see, like, the bus driver shooting up before he drives it, don't fucking be a narc. Yeah.
Even then, let him double cup while he's driving. But yeah.
Those children will be fine.
The hell rhetoric now that is it's this cycle that it cannot be broken of people claiming that the other side is being hypocritical. And, like, the real thing Kirk was trying to get at is, well, if that Republican had done this, there would have been hell to pay. And well, it's like, okay, but you created this hysteria, so clearly, like, this already happened here.
I don't know. I seem to think that there was a very anti-politically correct university professor who said that he wished that his students would all get triggered and committed suicide, and there was no hell to pay. He kept his job and got paid leap. No, he did.
He tweeted that?
He tweeted it.
Oh shit.
The anti-PC professor.
On a Twitter that identified him as an NYU professor. And there was no hell to pay. So
I mean, I think the other irony,
by the way,
course,
I'm still being sued.
The other irony, of course, unrelated, is that literally, like, if you go to any the comments to any article at IJR or Got News or any of the sites,
Daily Caller,
Daily Wire, Daily Caller, any of the sites that tried to make hay out of this, any article, just anything at all, and you will immediately see dozens of jokes just openly fantasizing about murdering liberals or throwing them out of helicopters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, I'm not bitching about that because I don't give a fuck.
No, it's the fucking cares.
Really
it has nothing to do with
troll
politics.
And not get mad.
It's not politics.
You have
it's
to
online.
Not get mad.
It's the hell world of online. It is online rhetoric and online communication. It's just people getting mad at each other and turning it
it's
into a
real
fetish. It's like being in Hellraiser. It's like we all open the fucking lament configuration and we're all in a digital realm having our flesh stripped from our bodies in exquisite agony.
Don't get mad. Get even. You know, don't get mad online, get even. And then to see Charlie Kirk going on Fox and Friends with his disgusting dolphin tooth face.
Yeah, speaking of Hellraiser, he is the Cenobite with
He's the guy.
Mr. Chatterer.
You don't see me calling the Cokes and be, like, sending them pictures of Charlie Kirk grinning and saying, how can you support this?
And you know, he was,
sir,
and he
goes,
this is unacceptable. Look at his gums.
And he goes, normally I'm not one. I don't like playing the victim.
Wrong.
And it's like, shut up.
False. That's literally your whole job.
Yeah. Your entire job is to play the victim, to get college Republicans to play the victim on campus, which leads us in to this week's.
Oh, wait. Before, I want to say, we talked about how much we love Jesse. Please. Watch Stefan, Jesse, and Rob Wisman's stream, Go Off Kings. It's the best Twitch stream, even if you don't like video games. It's hilarious. And listen to Jesse's podcast with Michael Hale, Dog Boner. Your Kickstarter sucks. Also great. Support Jesse. Stand by. Don't just... Everyone loves posting rare Jessies. Everyone loves being like, oh, Jesse's really done it now. But support Jesse because he's excellent and does great work.
Charlie Kirk and his organization, Turning Point USA, which is a
diaper fetish group.
Yeah.
pretending to be political.
Exists to fight campus culture war bullshit and get college Republicans to play the victim because they're mean fellow student, because basically nobody likes them, because the yes. lowest form of life imaginable is a college Republican. Yeah. So this week, a fellow TPUSA, you know, comrade or fellow traveler, member of TPU at Toilet Paper USA, tried to do this thing where to gin up outrage and get a professor fired or harassed for giving comments on a personal essay she wrote that seemed to correct not her writing but her point of view, to say that people kneeling for the national anthem in NFL games are in fact correct, and you would have gotten an A if you had agreed with my liberal point of view.
Because this comes on the heel of them making a big push about how there is systematic discrimination against conservative ideas in college classes by professors. That was the claim. And of course, that led people to say, is there any evidence for this? And this was the attempt say this is proof
it was,
that conservative students are being discriminated against because of their ideas.
I'm not going to say it was an essay. It's about 2.5 pages, double spaced.
The margins are like four inches. It's like a New Inquiry article. It's right down the middle.
They posted screenshots of these professors' comments, which, of course, everyone could see was just very basic suggestions on how to write,
how
an
to
essay.
Make something not sound like you were 12.
And the person who wrote this is a TPUSA person. And before I get into this, like, I had some brief pang of something like, people were like, hey, maybe don't make fun of this on the show. She's just a dumb college kid, which is true, but she's also a fucking op, 1,000%.
Yeah. She's getting
cold
cash.
We need to stop fetishizing the youth, because some of these apple-cheeked children are fucking the youth boond.
Yeah, see the movie The White Ribbon, okay? We should have dragged those kids before they turned into Hitler.
Do you mean the op as in operative or op as, like, Chief Keef says?
Both.
It? Okay, cool.
Both. I mean op in both senses of the word. Right. Okay, so this is I'm just going to read now her essay called Standing Up for Freedom.
Her essay, which was wrongly docked points because of wrong think. That's why. Because there was double plus ungood wrong think by a thought critic.
Oh, and then right before we jump into this, this is TPUSA at Kent State. Famous for, you remember the famous diaper guy?
No, it's in Kansas.
It's in Kansas?
Yeah, it's not. TPUSA... Kent State is just the most famous branch.
Okay, but she took place in the diaper protest. The woman who wrote this article was blowing bubbles in the with next to the adult diaper
I think
guy.
That's the woman who put it out.
Okay,
because she it wasn't the student. She is a TPUSA person, but she sent it to the Kent State lady, and then she put it out there.
Okay. All right. Let's now read from again. This essay is corrected, but I'm only going to read it as it was originally written.
The original masterpiece.
Yes. Standing up for freedom. Ever since I was young, I always stood for the national anthem, and so did everyone around me. When entering high school, I found myself frustrated at the Friday night football games when someone would talk or wear a ball cap during the national anthem. I never thought by the time I entered college, people would be taking a knee during the national anthem. For me and my family, it felt like a punch in the gut. Not just a punch where you can punch right back, but one that you aren't expecting and it knocks the wind out of you.
Well, is this Proust? This is so evocative.
Not just a regular punch, but one of those punches where they spin their arm really, really fast and then hit you and you go through the ceiling and then you're in the other floor and there's a big lump on your head and then there are birds flying around it.
Honestly, if this lady just fucking drew a picture of Thomas the Tank Engine running over Colin Kaepernick while he's kneeling, she wouldn't have been done. They wouldn't have done 1984 The Animal Farm to her or whatever. It would be more concise than this bullshit.
I believe everyone who is a United States citizen should stand for the national anthem out of respect for the men and women who risk their lives daily for the freedoms of the United States citizens.
Whoa.
By the way, this is a very interesting, like, uniquely American thing, too, that I've heard other people say. And they're like, you've turned your national anthem into the dead troops anthem. Like, we're just like, yeah, we like baguettes or, it's a much vaguer. It's more like the Puerto Rican flag where they just have it because they like it in every other country.
Yeah, I mean, Americans' favorite thing to do is to get pissed. Yeah. And the thing you can get the most pissed off about is imagining people disrespecting soldiers. We have like I'm not saying like economically or anything, like, but culturally, we have the most psychotic, like,
well, we feel politically impotent, so we get culturally care-lord.
Right, right. And we have this insane militaristic culture, but it's sort of filtered through this, like, weird outrage style thing. I mean, Amber, you've always talked about people weaponizing fragility. And I think one of the first places we saw that in mainstream culture was people just extrapolating things to mean that they were offensive to soldiers and offensive to people's sacrifices.
Well, that's definitely like that's definitely the post-Iraq like biggest phenomenon of that. Like,
but talk about man, like enforcing confines around people. You know, the first flank they did with Iraq was like, I don't care what you think about the war, but you have to support the troops, which is perfect because it's a completely nebulous concept.
It means nothing.
It doesn't mean shit.
It means support the war they're fighting in. That's what it
but
means.
But support the troops is affordable care for conservatives, you know? It's a meaningless term that they can just blanket over anything.
Well, you say it's meaningless, but let's see what this young lady has to say about what it means to her.
Let's see what Talking Points Nose Guard has.
Coming to college, I never pictured a conversation topic being if people should be standing, kneeling, or sitting.
No, wait. Go back.
Let's read this sentence again. TJ, run that back. Coming to college, I never pictured a conversation topic being if people should be standing, kneeling, sitting, or any other form of
protest.
That's
a lot of Jaren.
Or the
Jesus
national
Christ.
Anthem.
That's the Gerunditocracy right there.
My first semester, I saw...
Dear Penthouse, I never thought this would happen to me.
This is Blink-182, small things. Watching, sitting, kneeling.
Kneeling.
Say it ain't so, I will not go, stand on the field... Kaepernick's a hoe.
My first semester, I saw multiple protests over this very subject. In the first month of classes, I got an email from a classmate that stated, join the Student Power Coalition and WOKE, which stands for here, World of Colored Empowerment, colored spelled with a K.
Okay,
I just like to say I don't think this exists.
I hope not.
Be perfectly honest, if that does exist... The SJWs have gone too far. That's a terrible acronym.
That's not SJWs. That's like Capadonna. That's a fucking 90s rapper with that that type of misspelling, purposeful misspelling.
This felt like such a battle for something that seems like a simple courtesy.
She really takes the scenic route on all her sentences.
I stand for the national anthem and the flag of my country.
No shit.
Because I was brought up in a home that is rooted in a military background. I was raised by my grandfather, who is a veteran of the United States Army. She goes on to list all the people she knows who, you know, served in the military.
No, nothing about how this has anything to do with the stupid fucking anthem in the first place.
The flag means...
Again, the anthem has become the dead troop anthem.
The flag means many things to so many people, but to me, it is something more. The United States flag is a symbol of freedom, commitment, honor, bravery, sacrificial love, and dedication. The flag, though it has been changed many times over the years, still encompasses these basic principles.
I will never recognize Wyoming.
Okay, you guys ready for this next sentence?
Don't go for it.
When the founding fathers came to America to form a more perfect union,
great.
I know this is for an English class, but I can think of one thing wrong with that.
Well, no, but see, that's from the Gettysburg Address, so it's actually very literary and
okay.
smart.
That's called an allusion.
Yeah.
They inspired, when the founding fathers came to America to form a more perfect union, they inspired generations to come to stand for the causes they believed in. They inspired the fight from the man that is obviously still ongoing.
Who's the man in the sentence?
I would like to
not
say.
Not the cops who fucking shoot black people at will.
In this graded paper, the phrase that she puts in quotes, the man, is just circled with a question mark next to it.
No,
so,
the man.
The flag was designed showing the strength of the 13 original colonies in the stripes and the 50 states in the stars.
When it was designed with the 50 states?
No. The original 13 colonies.
Was Betsy fucking Ross, does she have psychic powers?
Soothsayer.
She already acknowledged that the flag has changed, so now she's... explaining what in the current version
she
is.
Says, in the stars, showing the unity and progress of them, I stand for a flag of freedom.
Hell yeah.
I believe that everyone should stand for the national anthem to honor those who paid the ultimate sacrifice of their lives. I would think the statement alone would be enough to convince people to stand, but unfortunately it is not. I believe everyone should stand because everyone knows someone who has risked it all. We are so privileged as to have the option to stand. You mean
we've all known somebody who went up to that girl with who's reading at the bar. That girl who you just know, she's never had a man really who could satisfy her.
Yeah, I mean, it's very someone about to participate in a breakdancing competition. They're going to risk it all.
We are so privileged as to have the option to stand in honor or protest.
The option.
Wait, there's an option.
Well, here we go. Let me just get through this whole sentence because, man, it is a car wreck. We are so privileged as to have the option to stand and honor or protest in disrespect unlike other countries. We have the privilege to show pride in who we are as Americans and what we say, do, or wear.
Gibberish.
Other countries like North Korea have no have no access to a public internet or any way to show their pride for a country of censorship. Wrong.
Oh,
wrong.
So
the North Koreans love
so
showing pride for
show
their country.
Pride.
They
They're
love
so
standing for their
it.
Flag.
Yeah, she should love North Korea. You have to stand for the anthem. What
by
is she?
By the way, we started.
What does the internet have to
also,
do with it?
They go off for their national anthem.
You know, like, we started this episode talking about really impressive national displays of solidarity. By the way, in the Winter Olympics, the breakout star of this year's Winter Olympics are the North Korean cheering sections.
Oh, yeah.
Who have these really cool, like, coordinated chants and cheers for their country and their flag.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a
you
privilege.
You should love that.
That's a privilege to do that.
Instead of singing some dour song about rockets, they're out there killing. There was a funny article that was like, the dastardly North Korean propaganda, they pick cheerleaders based on attractiveness. It's like, oh
is
my
Jerry
God.
Is Jerry Jones in charge of that country now?
Yeah, it's just America reading that. I would never do that.
I think it is wrong to protest the national anthem for the sole fact that people died believing in the flag that we stand for.
They believed that the flag existed.
You know how many fucking you know how many Koreans died for the fucking North Korean flag? Yeah. Quite a few. I believe it is wrong for people to protest the anthem because it is disrespecting a symbol of our country's pride. America is the best country in the world with the most freedoms. To protest and disrespect
but never do it
is absurd.
Never do it!
People believed so much in the United States anthem and flag that they literally gave and risked their lives for, and if someone believes anything means more than their freedom, they are wrong.
People Gibberish. Risked their lives to retain Gibberish. The institution of chattel slavery.
Well, we should respect that flag too, Amber.
People risk their lives.
I've never knelt at Grand Ole Opry.
People risk their lives to secure Lebensraum for the German people.
We have the duty to, at minimum, stand for an anthem that people literally gave everything for us.
Oh my God.
I will continue to stand and encourage all to stand for the United States National Anthem to honor the one person they know that served or serves. I will encourage and remain standing for the anthem of my great nation as it is the right thing to do. I will stand for my friends and family who believed in my freedom so highly they were willing to die for me to have my privileges and freedoms. I believe everyone should stand for the United States National Anthem because someone believes so highly in this country that they will die for a stranger to be free.
Because life is precious, and God and the Bible.
And U.S. Americans.
That is...
America is a land of contrast.
Like, that's not really any worse than most freshmen fucking writing, because kids suck at writing.
I've taught freshman writing.
How would you grade this, Amber?
Well, I wouldn't, because I teach freshman writing. And, like, basically, I give them a lot of time to revise, and a lot of what I do is say, read this out loud. That is how you learn whether you are making, you know, the language words for the ears and the eyes, or whether you are just vomiting up weird sounds.
I
would say this requires revision.
I just want to read here the teacher's comments at the end of this awful lib professor. Clara, you make the same point repeatedly and do not take into account why some people are kneeling. I am also concerned about the contradiction. decent writing, but look at my notes about sentence revisions.
Wow, that's incredibly polite.
That's very gentle.
That's so
also
nice.
Any argument you have has to, like, that is like the most obvious criticism. Any argument you have has to actually address the thing you're arguing with,
yeah,
which she never does once.
And that's,
and also, it sounds insane.
It was horrible. It's gibberish. But the thing is that the main the chief sort of conservative critique of the Academy in like the last couple of generations was, well, we've turned universities into these self-esteem factories for these kids. We don't make any requirements of them. We don't want to disabuse them of the false notions that they think, well, I'm smart enough, because you have to know that you're not good in order to become better, blah, blah, blah. And we're just creating this culture of permissiveness and no intellectual rigor. And now TPUSA has basically created a rubric for conservative students to go to college and say,
right,
and walk around thinking you are already a genius because you're conservative, and any criticism, any bad grade you get is the result of liberal bias. And how the fuck is that going to encourage anything other than absolute soft brain idiocy? Like, this woman is never going to get any better.
Her brain,
yeah, sorry, conservatives, not everyone gets a trophy.
Yeah, it's like, it is participation trophies, and they want them for being literally politically correct.
Yeah.
So, in conclusion,
I'm standing for flag.
F plus. You got
I'm
F
am
plus.
Doing me. I am standing for flag.
Dino, thanks for joining us. We will have all that information about the Medicare for All campaign in the show description if you are interested or want to get involved or further involved. But just continue to stand for U.S. Americans and Chapos and the fact that we are willing to die for your rights and privileges to not stand for us. So consider that.
But stand. Seriously. Yeah. Stand for us.
I just think it's wrong for people not to hear the DJ Smokey song and for them to think of all the people that they know or didn't know who didn't make it to the premium feed and then they couldn't afford it, but they did anyway, and they died doing that. So when you listen to the premium feed, you have a right to exercise your freedoms, but you listen to it.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheers.